Good morning. You have tuned in to the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. It is Thursday, November the 14th, 2019. It's you. Oh, I'm sorry, Jim. There you go.
You didn't turn on my microphone, Jack.
I know. And it's, we are into November, well into November. This is the first show of the year that we have done, Jim and I, on a Thursday with snow on the ground, I think. Right? It snowed once before, but it didn't really stick around.
No. We had snow in January and February. Jack, take another sip of your coffee, okay? We had snow in January and February, which I think you're saying is that this is our first show with snow on the ground since summer.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, that is, I suppose, what I meant.
And we have Beth with us. This is Beth Weber. She is... What, is there a word before coordinator, music coordinator, just coordinator with the festival at Sandpoint, their chamber music series? Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
It is so good to have you here with us. And we're going to be talking about an upcoming performance this Saturday of the Canaccorder Trio at the Hartwood Center with Beth. But Jack.
Can I tell you about the weather?
Sure. Go for it. Our first snow is still on the ground, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Where are we here? Where's my 7-day forecast? This comes to us from the National Weather Service, of course, as usual. We are looking at... Oh my goodness! What a strange display I have in front of me.
It's hold it up to the microphone so our listeners can see.
I don't care for it.
what, the microphone, the forecast? I mean, it's very, very ambiguous.
I know. It's mostly cloudy today. How about that? With a high near 39 degrees Fahrenheit. The low tonight down to 34 degrees. Tomorrow, rain or snow. This forecast has changed a little bit in the last 24 hours.
In what way?
Well, it looks like the chance of precipitation has gone up and
to what?
To about 90%.
Go away.
Yeah.
I've got to find that 10% and stand there.
I know. It looks like it looks like we're going to get something coming out of the sky tomorrow. Most likely it will be rain or snow, but who knows? 37 degrees Fahrenheit. There is a chance of rain or snow. And then cloudy on Friday night, a slight chance of snow, and then a chance of rain or snow on Saturday morning and then into the afternoon. Possibly rainy on Saturday night, chance of rain on Sunday. Coming into Monday, chance of rain and patchy fog. The highs for the weekend in the high 30s, the lows in the low 30s. So kind of hovering right in that range, but a little lower up until this moment. It looked like the snow that we have on the ground right now was going to be going away and relatively quickly. Now it looks like maybe it will be joined by a little more tomorrow if the temperatures are low enough.
So many chances in that forecast. Mm-hmm. I have the forecast here for the Washington, D.C. area, as I always do or try to do on this program. Marvel at the wonders of technology and that you can just simply, like my sister and brother-in-law say, Alexa, 88.5 KRFY. And so she says, good morning. Of course, right now it's about 11:30. It should be good lunch. 32 now, high of 48, mostly sunny, temps way below normal there. So that is the way it is in the world of Washington, D.C. Of course, other things are happening there besides the weather, but we're going to talk about Beth Weber.
Mm-hmm.
Beth, how are you doing?
I'm doing just great, thank you.
It is so good to have you with us because you're such a, even on a cloudy, overcast day like this, you're such a ray of sunshine.
Aw, thank you.
Well, she is here because on this Saturday at the Hartwood Center at 6:30 p.m., the Canaccorder Trio is going to do their world premiere. I mean, never placed before in this cosmos. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the concert series? And then what we've got is about a 20-minute interview with the three members of the trio. Then I think we have a clip of their music, and then we'll come back with Beth and talk some more. But Beth, can you just give a umbrella look.
Okay, well, what inspired this series was a concert given last year by the Selway Trio at the Panada Theater, and it was so well received, we realized that there was a need for chamber music in Sandpoint, and that people love it. So we decided to step in and try to fill that need. So that was the birth of the chamber series, and we're doing four concerts throughout the year of small groups that are playing classical music and trying to highlight local musicians that are upcoming in their careers.
And briefly, what's chamber music, the word chamber?
Well, think of it as a chamber is a small area, okay. So it has to be a small group.
Now, the numbers can vary?
The numbers can vary from a small orchestra down to solos and trios, duets. So in this case, it's a trio, and they're going to be performing duets and solos and trios.
And the trio is Mika Hood, Mike Keep, and David Brewster. And are they local musicians, or where are they located out of?
Michael is in Coeur d'Alene. David Brewster is in Spokane. And Mika did live here. She just recently moved to Spokane. So in the Northwest.
So a lot of local roots. Jack, are we all queued up for that interview?
We are.
Okay, it's about a 20-minute interview with the members of the Canaccorda Trio who are performing at the Heartwood Center this Saturday, November 16th. And Jack and Beth and I, we're going to step out, maybe, you know, have a cigarette, a cocktail out on First Avenue, and come back in, and we'll talk some more afterwards. Okay, here is the interview with the Canaccorda Trio.
It's Jack and Jim, and we're on the phone with the Canaccorda Trio. That's Mike Keep, David Brewster, and Mika Hood, who are playing at the Heartwood Center here in Sandpoint at November 16th. That's a Saturday at 6:30 p.m. as part of the Festival at Sandpoint's Chamber Music Series. So good morning to the Canaccorda Trio, Mike, David, and Mika. Where do we...
Good morning. Good morning.
Where are you guys calling from today?
We are in Hayden.
Okay. And this will be, if I'm not mistaken, your debut concert.
It will, yes.
Okay. Well, then, how long have you guys been playing together, you know, rehearsing, and when's the first time you guys met? How did this whole thing get started?
Well, that's kind of a complicated question, because... Like, David and I have played together for a while longer, and we more recently added Mike, but then even before that, Mike and I played some duets together. Like, so we've all kind of worked together separately, and we're just recently now forming an official trio.
Is it is it kind of a small world as far as, like, the style of music that you perform in the Northwest? Do you find do you think you pretty much know everybody in the area who professionally plays the kind of music that you guys play?
Well, that's the feeling I'm getting. I'm new to the area. I just moved here a couple of years ago.
And is this David or Mike?
This is Mike.
Okay.
You know, my first efforts were to start to get to know the musicians, and you know, the area is quite close knit and very friendly. So I quickly, you know, kind of started learning who's who in the area, and saw Mika play with the Coeur d'Alene Symphony, and then we ended up teaching together at the festival at Sandpoint Summer Music Camp. And that's kind of how we met, and then we started talking about forming our trio. So this is actually a configuration I've been wanting to do for a long time, but never had the opportunity. So it worked out real well to meet Mika, and she's been working with David for quite a long time. So it just kind of fit together pretty easily.
So let's go down the list, I guess, starting with Mika. What do you play, and how long have you been playing music?
I play the cello, and I've been playing cello for, I guess, 21 years now. I started when I was 10. But even before that, I played piano. My mom was my teacher. I started when I was 3 or 4. So, you know, I don't actually remember a time when I wasn't playing music.
Okay. Well, that goes back a little ways. Yeah.
Okay, let's switch over to Mike. Has saxophone been your always been your instrument of choice?
Well, actually, I started out on viola in fifth grade. And after my fifth grade year, my orchestra teacher came to me and said, "Mr. Keep, don't ever touch a musical instrument again. You don't have a musical bone in your body."
Okay.
So I went home and told that to my mom, and she says, "Well, your aunt has a saxophone in her closet. You want to give that a shot?" So I did, and I'm still playing. So, you know, that was 40-odd years ago. And
well, that's a big switch from a viola to a saxophone. So from a viola where you didn't have a musical bone in your body to a saxophone, how did that occur?
Well, you can get away with it on saxophone.
What do you mean by that? What are you getting away with?
Oh, the boneless musicianship, I guess. I don't know. You know, I took the saxophone pretty easily, I guess. I kind of come from Polish stock, and a lot of my relatives don't read music. They just kind of play. And I thought, well, I can do that on viola. So I think I was kind of a pain in the rear end because I refused to learn how to read music for a while. So, you know, when I switched to saxophone and started band, I think I took it more seriously and had more fun with it.
What skills do you use with the saxophone that you weren't using with a viola? In other words, does a saxophone demand a different skill set?
Not really, at least when you're beginning. You know, it's just a determination to learn the instrument and, you know, to read music. And, you know, the only difference is that it's a wind instrument, so you have to actually, you know, produce the sound with your mouth, your embouchure, and you use a reed. So, you know, with the mouthpiece. So it's a little finicky in that respect. Whereas, you know, with cello or viola, you just drag a bow across it and it sounds great.
Oh yeah, it's that simple.
Oh, Mika, do you want to add to that anything? Do you want to defend? This is your chance to defend the cello.
Oh, I have to defend the honor of my instrument. Well, obviously, playing instruments physically are very different. Wind versus strings versus percussion or piano or whatever. They're all physically very different. But usually we start at such a young age with such elastic brains that, you know,
right,
if you put your mind
right
to it, you can do it. My skill set does not transfer over to the saxophone. I couldn't pick up a saxophone, and I probably couldn't even make a sound on it. I could read the music that he was playing from, but actually physically playing the instrument wouldn't be a part of my knowledge.
Right.
And so we're all just so specific in what we do, and we tend to think that what we do is better or harder than what everyone else does. None of it's true.
And David, you're the pianist.
I am.
And what's your relationship with the instrument? I mean, first of all, you're not portable like a cello or a saxophone, so you're sort of landlocked.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, at least in terms of playing an acoustic piano, you kind of get whatever is at the venue or whatever place that you're performing at. So,
for better or for worse.
For better or for worse. There are some wonderful instruments out there, and there are some instruments that you hope to never see again. But anyways, yeah.
So the trio comes together to be a saxophone, a piano, and a cello. Is there a lot of music written for that particular combination of instruments, or are you guys kind of coming up with your own blend, here, because I don't think I've ever actually seen those three on stage together without other instruments at all at the same time.
Right. Well, the normal configuration is a piano trio with violin and cello and piano. The saxophone was only patented in 1846, so it's a relatively young instrument. And we're kind of coming into our heyday at this point, to where composers are really being challenged by saxophones to write whatever they want. And saxophones are at a level of expertise where we can play whatever composers want. And so we've been looking for new ways, new configurations to apply the saxophone, because it's not a natural part of the symphony orchestra, but it is for, you know, a concert band. And I'd say in the last 10 years, this configuration of saxophone, cello, and piano has been noticed more. There's a few groups out there, and composers are taking more of an interest because of the flexibility of the saxophone is very much like clarinet violin, I'm sorry. But in this concert, I'll be playing soprano saxophone, alto saxophone, tenor saxophone, and just the distinction between those three voices, I think, lends a really unique characteristic to our group in particular. So it's kind of coming onto the scene now, and we're hoping to encourage more composers to write for us in particular, and we'll see how much more music is being written for this configuration just in general around the world.
Now, does anyone in your group write the music for the group?
No. We're basically, for this concert, I had some music written for this configuration already that I had been looking to play. And then we're also going to be playing some solo material as well. So I'll be playing, you know, a solo piece with piano, and Mika will be playing a solo Paganini piece. And then David will also play some solo piano. So I think we're excited to be able to not only play as a trio, but as a duo and as soloists, and just kind of give a good eclectic mix with our programming.
When you decide on your eclectic mix, what are the dynamics of making the choices? How do you, with three different instruments, when you sit down and say, okay, what are we going to play? What are the deciding factors in terms of what you play as a group? I take it that individually you each can select, you know, the piece for the cello or the piece for the piano or the piece for the saxophone. But when all three of you are on stage together, how do you come up with what the items in the program will be?
Well, I think it's a really cool opportunity for us, because usually as classical musicians, we're playing music by people that have been dead for hundreds of years, mm-hmm. and people have already decided what the masterworks are. But now with this group, we get to talk to composers that are still living and breathing today, and we have these correspondences with them. And so it's a really neat opportunity for us to decide what music actually gets played. And so we talk with these composers and we listen to their work and we decide if we like it or not. And I think that's a really neat opportunity for us.
Okay, you mentioned a few of the composers, Paganini, that you'll be playing at this concert on Saturday, November 16th. What will the program be like?
Well, we're starting with a world premiere of a piece written by a Brazilian composer that I've worked with for many years now. It's a piece called The First New Waltz. I can't say it in Portuguese. it's a really pretty waltz in 5/4 time. Instead of three beats in a bar, there's five beats in a bar. So it just kind of adds an extra lilt to it. It's a really pretty piece. For that, I'm on tenor saxophone, which the sound of the tenor and the sound of the cello really blend extremely well. And it just makes this piece a very beautiful way to start the program. So we're going to be starting with that. And then we're going to, I think we have two other pieces written by a British composer who I've worked with for many years now, too. So we're going to be playing, Mika and I will be playing a duet, a tango for soprano saxophone and cello. And then the trio will play a trio piece written by the same composer for soprano, cello, and piano. And then our final trio piece was written by a composer who lived in Missoula, Montana. He just passed away a couple of years ago. And it's his music is, I don't know if I mentioned his name, David Maslanka. His music is very powerful, and we thought that might be a really great way to end the program with his piece. And then intermixed with that, we'll be doing our own solo pieces as well.
I'm sort of interested in terms of, you mentioned a Brazilian composer, a Missoula composer. How do you find out what's out there in terms of music that might be something you'd want to play? Do you Google it, or how do you find out, or is there a network for musicians to find out who's composing what and this was worth hearing? How does that work?
Well, we mentioned the small world of music before.
Okay.
It's shocking how often you go somewhere and meet a musician and you're like, oh, I went to school with you. And you meet on the other side of the world. And so it really is a small world. So through all of our schooling and just general networking, because we all perform and we all meet musicians, we find composers and we hear their music in different concerts, and friends will recommend you listen to this guy. And it's just kind of, a lot of it is word of mouth. A lot of it is just who you know, who you went to school with, who you work with.
As far as the Brazilian composer goes, I met him when I was working at a record label. He had submitted an album for that record label, and he and I got to talking, and he just started, introducing me to his music, which, I found really beautiful. And the same thing with the British composer, Graham Lynch. I met him through the record label. He had submitted some music, and I had a saxophone quartet at the time, and we decided to play and record his saxophone quartet. So there's, professional correlations that, work out that way as well. But as you mentioned, Google, I mean, social media, I've met composers on LinkedIn and Facebook. And I mean, you can hear and see people playing across the country or the world, and, like their music. And it's really easy to contact them and say, hey, this is me, this is what I do. Can we collaborate with something? And musicians are always, eager to collaborate with each other and with composers. And there's a great dynamic with that. So I think we're living in an age where, composers really haven't had this kind of opportunity to meet eager musicians and create, really world music with so many different influences. So it's a really exciting time as far as that goes.
It sounds like the accessibility, that one can be in touch, one can be in contact, composers with the musicians, a lot easier than, let's say, 25 years ago or 50 years ago.
Sure.
Let's talk about the Canaccorda Trio. This is going to be your debut. What happens after your debut?
We don't know.
So this could be a final concert?
We'll see what happens with the concert. If we're appreciated, maybe we'll keep going. If we're booed off the stage and have to dodge wine bottles and tomatoes, then maybe we need to rethink what's going on. In all seriousness, we're really thankful for Beth Weber with the festival at Sandpoint to giving us this opportunity to play. From here, we're looking forward to, looking at other chamber music series and universities we could play at and that kind of thing. But to have this performance under our belt is a big step for us, and we can kind of evaluate where we are with things and how we want to move forward. So we're just thankful for the opportunity to play at this concert series.
Talking about, just to go back for a second, do you find, like, you're working with a Brazilian composer, a composer from Missoula, can you tell just by listening to the piece, like, this has a South American flavor to it, or, you know, this sounds like something from, you know, from America, from the Western United States or something, versus the piece by an English composer? Do they have different identifiable characteristics, or does it all kind of become, you know, music from the planet Earth at this point?
I think it depends on the composer. Some people rely heavily on their culture and heritage and use that influence in their music, and other people don't. The English composer that we're playing, it wrote the tango that we're performing. And so, you know, that really is not English.
And actually, that composer, Graham Lynch, he was asked a bunch of years ago now to write a tango for somebody, and he's like, "I'm a British composer. What do I know about tangos?" And his music caught on so quickly that he was contacted by a German publisher that specializes in tangos and said, "Hey, write more tangos." And so he became kind of known for writing tangos for about 10 years. And it just kind of fell upon him, and he's a brilliant composer, and just kind of did this on the side. He writes a lot of symphonic works, piano works, and that kind of thing that are more on the contemporary side, but very lyrical. And he just kind of dabbled in the tango, and it took off. I mean, a lot of people have recorded his tangos, so that was kind of an interesting little take. So you never know which direction you might end up going in as a composer. And he kind of laughs about it that he got so popular doing this.
Hmm. Well, we are speaking with Mika Hood, Mike Keep, and David Brewster, the three members of the Canaccorda Trio, who will be at the Heartwood Center Saturday, November 16th. I want to thank you all very much for gathering around the phone and sharing your thoughts on your instruments and your music, and we look forward to seeing you up here on Sandpoint.
Sure, thank you very much. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, wasn't that pleasant? You are listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. We are live in studio again with Beth Weber, but we're going to continue this recorded music and conversation session with a performance by the aforementioned Canaccorda Trio, who we just got off the phone with right now. This is the piece that they were talking about, which will have its world public premiere on Saturday. Here it is, the Canaccorda Trio. Thank you. the Canaccorda Trio from, well, around the Inland Northwest, who will be making their premiere, or their debut, I guess. It's their debut on Saturday.
November 16th at 6:30 at the Hartwood Center. And Beth, where can one get tickets?
You can get tickets ahead of time at Eve's Leaves on First Avenue in Sandpoint, or you can get tickets at the door. They're $15 or $10 for youth and seniors.
So the selection, do we have a name for that selection that they played?
I believe that was the Primera Neo Valsa. Yeah.
Ah, was this the one
Primera
by the Brazilian?
Neo Valsa. Yes, by Anderson Viana, which was written this will be the first time that you'll be able to hear it in public, I think.
And that's their most subdued piece. Mm-hmm. The rest of them are going to be tangos.
It's wonderful.
It's a good way to introduce the program.
Now you became familiar with them and their music through the summer camp, correct?
Yes, they both Mika and Michael worked at the music camp as instructors, and David performed with Mika in a concert when we did the faculty concert, so I got to meet them all that way.
Okay, and maybe you can talk briefly. We're here with Beth Weber, coordinator of the Chamber Music Series, the Festival Chamber Music Series, as well as the emperor of the summer camp, the Festival at Sandpoint Summer Camp. What's the relationship between the Festival at Sandpoint and the Chamber Music Series?
Well, the Festival at Sandpoint is a sponsor of the Chamber Music Series. Tickets don't pay enough to pay for the venue and the musicians. So the festival stepped up and is paying for the venue and everything that's going to make this concert happen. And then ticket sales will be used for paying the musicians for their hard work and beautiful music.
Well, I think what's important to realize about the festival at Sandpoint, it's just not two weekends in early August. There's the summer camp, and this is a way that they give back to the community throughout the year.
They give back to the community in so many ways to promote musical education. It's something that most people don't really know about. Just amazing. I could make a list of things they do if you... Yeah.
What's on that list?
Well,
what's at the top about that?
First of all, they provide musical instruments for the public schools so that there's no child in this community that has to say, I can't be in band because I can't afford an instrument. So any child can be in band because of the festival providing instruments for them. That's wonderful. Then the second thing is they also provide the maintenance for those instruments. Which, you know, the kids are hard on them, so there's a lot of work involved in keeping those instruments up and running. And then last summer, for instance, the festival paid for tuning all the pianos at the high school. I think there were 5 pianos, and they hadn't been tuned in about 7 years, according to John Brownell. And so that was a dire need that the schools had for that, because kids practice their piano on it, and if it's not in tune... What's that going to do to their ear training, right?
I'm not familiar with piano tuning, but I take it 7 years is a little bit long.
That's a long time, especially with the way the pianos get used there in the practice rooms. There are 3 strings for every note on the piano, so that's a lot of strings to keep in tune.
Mm-hmm. How does one tune a piano? Do you need special tools for
that? You have to have special tools, and that's all I know about it.
Yeah.
How about a good ear? A good ear?
Yes, or you also have tools that can tell you whether the sound is right.
Yeah.
There are tuners that you can listen to or look at that will tell you if it's right on. So even nowadays with technology, the good ear is not necessarily...
Well, I've seen like guitarists, they'll have like a little machine, mm-hmm. and they'll do something, and then you see waves.
Right.
And
yeah, there's a lot of visual tuners where you can see whether it's in tune or not as opposed to hearing it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that's a great service to the high schools to have their pianos tuned.
Oh, yeah, they were ecstatic about it. So
this is what it sounds like.
Yeah. So then the festival also provides a what they call the fifth grade outreach, which is in May, and they send a small chamber orchestra to the grade schools in the county, and perform for the fifth graders to show them what all the instruments are that would be in a symphony orchestra or a band, and explain to them what their names are and what they sound like. Yeah, so there's that. Then there's the Festival Music Scholarships. So they provide sizable scholarships each year for upcoming seniors in high school who are serious about their music. They have two instrumental scholarships, a voice scholarship, a dance scholarship, one for songwriting, and even one for creative writing. So those are wonderful ways in which the festival promotes continuing musicianship from our community. Then we've already mentioned the music camp, which occurs in the summertime. Mm-hmm. Last year, we had 129 students who got to go to music camp for 4 days in the summer with excellent instructors from around the Inland Northwest, people from the Spokane Symphony, the best we could find everywhere around here. So, and that was completely free for the students. They paid a nominal registration fee, but they got a T-shirt for that. So basically, free.
Who can beat that?
Yeah, free music camp. That's a wonderful thing when you think about what it costs to go to the other music camps that have to charge because, you know, no one sponsors them.
Okay. You briefly mentioned the Chamber Music Series, mm-hmm. and this is its second year.
The Chamber Music Series? This is the first year.
The first
this
year.
This is the second concert of the Chamber Music Series.
Second
right.
concert of the first
yeah.
year.
You got that number right.
There we go. And two more to go?
Two more to go.
Do we have a lineup for them?
Or? Well, we have one that's coming in January, the 30th of January, and that's the Jerry Mulligan All-Stars.
And we're going to have the interview with them, and mm-hmm. we're going to have you back on the air with us.
Right, so we can talk about that at that time.
Absolutely.
I want to continue with what the festival does for the community, though, with education, because a lot of people don't realize that the festival supports two free orchestras, youth orchestras, one that's more beginner level and one that's more advanced. And that's been going on for 12 years. Students can come and be a part of an orchestra without paying anything. All they have to do is the work, which is really quite a contribution in itself. If you think about how much it costs, hundreds of dollars really, to be a part, to be a member of the Coeur d'Alene Youth Symphony or to be a part of the Spokane Youth Symphony, hundreds of dollars a year. And here in Sandpoint, we have free orchestra for our young people, thanks to the festival.
So how do you, if a person was interested in supporting these educational opportunities specifically and not just, you know, supporting the festival at large, you mm-hmm. can do that?
You can do that. You can mm-hmm. earmark any donation you want. Just say right on the check what it's for. This is for the educational purpose, or this is for the orchestra, or this is for the music camp, or this is for the chamber series, whatever you want to sponsor it for. Just like we have underwriters for the concerts on the in the summer series, we can have people underwrite anything they want. And that Sandpoint is so good in that way because so many people step up to help support the festival with their services and with cash.
How about their instruments? I mean, you know, if they... Sometimes, as one ages, one puts aside one's saxophone or one's flute or one's... what about instruments that have collected dust?
People donate instruments to the festival, and if they're a band instrument, it goes directly to the schools, so the students have
Great.
Instruments to play, okay. right? The festival also has a stash of string instruments, since we don't have orchestras in the school, but anybody that wants to play a string instrument... can rent for a nominal fee any of these cellos, violas, violins, even guitars.
You said we don't have stringed instruments in high schools?
We don't have stringed instrument programs in our public schools in Idaho or in San Juan.
So if one wants to play the cello or the violin...
Then they need to go to the festival's free orchestra.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know.
So that's one of the reasons why that orchestra is there.
So what are typical band instruments? What, drums?
And all the wind instruments. If you have to blow into it, it's a band instrument.
Really?
Yeah, and then the drums.
I didn't know that, Jack. Mm-hmm. Did you?
I did not. No, I had no idea that the violin was not.
Interesting.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, when I think of marching bands, I don't think of cellos or violins, but I stop and think in terms of high schools that they're stringed instruments, one could have an opportunity, but I guess not.
Not here. I mean, Idaho is the lowest funded education in the country. So if you remember that, you know that they're not going to be putting extra money into lots of music programs and, you know, frills. They're going to stick down to the real basics.
To the meat and potatoes.
And the band plays in the sports events, and so they will, of course, get priority. And then, of course, the choirs, which we have outstanding choirs here, are basic to human beings. Mm-hmm. So that, of course, is part of the programs in the schools here. But that's why the festival's contribution to the community is so
significant.
Important.
Yes. It's significant. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do have to say not only the festival's contributions, but Beth Weber's contributions, because just sitting here watching you, you know, I feel like I want to see pom-poms, you know. I mean, you are such a cheerleader for what the festival does and what it brings to the community. And, you know, and it's an important, a lot has to do with the hard work and that you do.
Yeah, it's a real heartfelt commitment that the festival board and all the people that work there have toward promoting music. I mean, it's part of being a human, right? So we want to make sure that you know, we can support that with our best effort.
Yeah. Well, music is a lifelong commitment or an attachment or something that stays with us. We're here with Beth Weber, Jim Healy, and Jack Peterson on The Morning Show. And we want to repeat again, this Saturday, the 16th of November, at 6:30 at the Hartwood Center, will be
the Canaccorda Trio.
And tickets are available. And how much are the tickets?
They're available at Eve's Leaves. They're $15 for adults and $10 for youth and seniors. And that is an excellent price for this wonderful music. It's going to be delicious music. It's going to take you on an emotional ride like you've never heard before with this combination of instruments.
And also tickets at the door.
Yes, tickets at the door. Hmm. And the doors will open at 6.
So. And the concert begins at 6:30.
Yes.
And do you have any idea how long the concert will last?
Including the intermission, it'll be about an hour and a half.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Anything else, Jack, that we have to before we slide Beth on out to First Avenue, which is taking shape?
Well, I mean, you know, we could always ask about if there was any kind of setback or if you experienced any kind of setback after the... you know, with the changes going on at the festival or the ongoing issues going on.
Well,
if you're part of it.
You know, I'm kind of on the tangentially. I'm not in any of the decision-making parts of that. But, you know, anything that's worth doing is going to have setbacks and challenges along the way. And I just like to think of it as if you're going to go up to a beautiful mountain view, you have to drive along a windy, bumpy road to get there. And sometimes that happens with just about anything we endeavor to do. But our community is so great at stepping up to support the festival whenever we need, you know, help with anything. So we're not worried about it. We're excited about the series that's coming up in the summer and getting a chance to use the new Memorial Field. It'll be a new learning curve, definitely a new dance for us because a new surface to work on. But yeah. I think it's going to be wonderful.
And as far as the educational component and the you know, and the winter concert series or the chamber concert series, you guys never missed a beat on that, really.
We kept it going.
Yeah.
You know, the money, because of that one concert that was canceled because of the weather, the money is tight this year. But, you know, we've got our season tickets on sale now. And anybody that buys a season's ticket can consider themselves a donor in a way, because that cash is going to be what helps keep the orchestra instructor paid throughout the rest of this year. Papers and computers working in the office so that we can print up programs for concerts like the chamber series. There's a lot that goes on in the background, and everything you do to help the festival helps the community in its musical growth.
Well, thank you very much for coming by this morning, Beth. Always lovely to see you.
Pleasure to be here. It's always fun to talk with you.
Well, it's good to have you. And do we whisper happy birthday? Oh. Let's whisper happy birthday to Beth. Again, the Canaccorda Trio this Saturday, the 16th of November at 6:30. Tickets at Eve's Leaves. And at the door, you'll hear a cello, a piano, and a saxophone. Beth, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a music break on this date, November 14th in 1961. This song is the title song from an Elvis Presley movie that was released on this date, November 14th, 1961. That is something like 58 years ago. Here is Blue Hawaii.
Night and you.
That was Elvis Presley singing Blue Hawaii from 1961 on this date. That movie premiered, and that was before we started writing Hawaii, H-A-W-A-I, apostrophe I, with a glottal stop.
When did that start? I mean, when did that...
You know whom we need to have on to tell us that? Dinah Wall.
I know.
Dinah would explain the entire history behind that glottal stop with Hawaii.
Yeah.
And she does it so perfectly. I do not know the history of it, but
I'm sure it's always been there in the native language, but when did it get recognized?
I don't know. I know that it's not on postage stamps, U.S. postage stamps.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know that.
Well, that's one of the few things. Before we have another interview coming up, I do want to say that there is a free food distribution today from 11 to 1 p.m., 2 hours. At the Walmart Supercenter on U.S. 95 in Ponderé, free produce and nutritional perishable products for anyone in need of food assistance. No appointment or documentation needed. Held outside, rain or shine. This is from Mobile Market Second Harvest. Free food distribution today, 11 to 1. So for anyone out there, free produce and nutritious perishable products for anyone in need of food assistance. There you go. 11 to 1 at Walmart.
At Walmart on Ponderé.
That's okay. Right.
Well, yeah, we do have one more person in the studio. This young lady has been here before in the studio, if I'm not mistaken.
But not on a Thursday. She's usually here on a Tuesday.
I know. I think she may have been in here subbing for one of us before. Maybe.
Could have been.
On a Thursday. Who knows?
Julie Calamine from the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show, and she is here with us to talk
about a new program that's going to be joining the KRFY schedule. Jim, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Jack, and thank you for allowing me to join you.
You bet, and we're looking at a new program that's going to debut 6 o'clock on Wednesday. That's when it will appear on a regular basis from 6 to 7, and it will begin on November the 20th.
Yes, it will.
And tell us about On Being.
Well, I will do my best. On Being is a weekly program sponsored or hosted by a woman named Krista Tippett. And On Being, oh boy, it's an eclectic program that is a little bit hard to nail down and describe, but I'm going to do my best. It's a program about talking about spiritual matters, matters of faith, matters of science, matters of politics, and how they all intertwine together, and basically how we can work together as human beings to get together and solve mysteries, talk about philosophy, etc. Very eclectic. I can tell you a little bit about Krista Tippett, if you like. She is a gal who lives in Minnesota. She grew up in a small town in Oklahoma, Shawnee, Oklahoma. She was admitted to Brown University. She graduated with a degree in history, and then she went to work for a little while. She was a foreign correspondent. She was in East Germany around the time of the Berlin Wall coming down. So she's had a very, what I would say, Jim, is a very varied work life. And then she began thinking of matters of spirituality and how do folks get along in troubled times. And that led her to a show that she began in the early, well, late 1990s, mid-1990s, and that was called Speaking of Faith. And that was talking about matters of religion and spirituality. Since then, she's expanded to talk about how philosophy, science, politics come together to have a station identity. And then, yeah,
so that happens. I noticed that you brought in two books by Krista, you know, that and they're from the library, so that you can when Julie returns them from the East Bonner Library, County Library. One is Einstein's God: Conversations About Science and the Human Spirit. And the other is Becoming Wise, an inquiry into the mystery and art of living.
That's right. And those books are some of them. Some of the subject matter for listening to God is, of course, science and God. And the other book is a series of interviews with people that are going to be very interesting. Some, I'd just like to mention some of the people that Krista Tippett has interviewed in the past, and we'll have new ones in the future. But she's interviewed the poet Mary Oliver, the conservative political writer David Brooks, John Lewis, the U.S. congressman from Georgia, who marched with Martin Luther King at Selma, David Whitey, who's an artist, Elizabeth Alexander, another poet, Wendell Berry and Ellen Davis, Esther Sternberg, who is a scientist and an immunologist, talking about the science of healing places. It's a very interesting program, guys, so I just think the community is going to enjoy having it on our program schedule.
Well, what I'm enthused about is that if you look at the KRFY program schedule, most of our programs deal with music. And, in that 5 to 7 o'clock window we have, it's mainly talk radio. And, you know, which is almost a throwback where you sit back and you listen to what's being spoken on the airwaves rather than, ooh, I'm, you know, making supper and here's a Rolling Stones song or something like that. That I think that this is an exciting addition to our program schedule that will debut on November 20th, Wednesday. Now, this is a block that usually was Bioneers. We moved Bioneers over to Friday, I think at 6:30. And then Velma, Queen of Fun, would have it until 9:30. But Velma has gone to her winter home in Ellijay, Georgia. And so we're using the first hour from 6 to 7 for On Being. And then you can hear music selected by Velma, Queen of Fun, for the next 2 hours. So, again, a new addition to the KRFY morning show, not morning show, program schedule.
That's right.
6 to 7 on Wednesdays on Bean.
That's right. And don't forget, you can always live stream and you can listen to it later as podcast. So if you miss it on Wednesdays, you can catch it via On Being. So hope folks will listen.
So I remember you and I, Julie, are both expatriates from the Gopher State. And I remember listening to Krista Tippett when I lived there and enjoying her programming very much. Is this... How did we end up with it over here at KRFY?
It's a kind of an interesting story, and I'll make it brief, but I was listening to one of her podcasts because I, too, enjoyed it, Minnesota Jack, and wanted to hear it. I hadn't heard it for a while and was listening to an interesting interview with a young man who'd been a white supremacist, went to college, got to know some Jewish community, started attending their Sabbath Seders, and over a two-year period, they became friends with one another and both changed their thinking about the world. The white supremacist, I think, changed his thinking more than the other folks. But anyway, so it was just so fascinating, and I got to thinking about that more, and I'd happened to have met Krista Tippett at a fundraiser many, many years years ago, and I just thought, what the heck, I'm going to give this a shot. I sent her an email explaining why I would enjoy having the program, although we probably couldn't afford it at its full rate. As you know, programs cost money. And about 2 weeks later, I heard back that they wanted for us to have this program. And that's how we have it. So it's pretty exciting. It's not really offered anywhere regionally. It's offered nationally, but we don't have a local station. We don't have it in Spokane. And
well, this is a great opportunity. And but before you guys leave, you're both Golden Gophers. Do you want to make any sort of, they are, Jack just fist bumped.
Jack, yeah. Make the prediction.
Okay. Oh, the Gophers are in the Rose Bowl. I think it's already locked up. No.
Let me tell you, that game last week against Penn State wasn't that inspirational.
Yeah.
They are 8-0, and I think this is the first time they've been in the top 10 since I was a little child.
Yeah.
In the 60s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's.
No, I was a little child.
I'm not even an alum, but it's, I mean, I never
exciting,
went to the university.
Isn't it?
It is exciting.
I'm sure Krista Tippett is rooting for the Golden Gophers as well. The show premieres on Being next Wednesday, the 20th, 6 to 7. Give it a listen. Sure, you won't be disappointed. Anything in conclusion, Julie, you want to say?
No, I think that covers it. Thank you both for allowing me to introduce the program.
You bet. Do we have the Golden Gophers fight song? What is the fight song, Jack?
Ski you ma. Ra, ra, ra for ski you ma.
Right, ski? Right.
Yeah.
You?
I did not know that.
Or sky you ma, ski you ma. Yeah.
I'm sure Minnesota, there's some Golden Gopher out there and are listening. Wonderful.
To our colors, true we shall ever be.
Oh my
firm
gosh.
And strong,
play a song,
united
real,
are we.
Play a song real quick, Jack.
Ra, ra, ra for ski you ma. Ra, 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 ra for the U of M.
You can't see me, but I'm wiggling my pom-poms in the studio.
The ones that Beth left behind.
That's right.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in, Julie. That is next Wednesday, November 20th, 6 to 7, on Being Krista Tippett.
Okay. We are more than out of time, so lots going on this weekend. As always, check Sandpoint Online for information about what you can do around town. We are going to go right ahead with Bird Note and returning to your usually scheduled program, Otto's Eclectic Mix, all day long after that. So stay tuned. Thank you for joining us here on The Morning Show. This is 88.5 KRFY Ponderay.